working out and having absolute final say-so and control over your body gives you the discipline to shut it down and say no to every other thing that's going to screw up your life.
That is true.
And he let it go, man. He let it go, and the next thing he started letting it go in other ways. And that's, I don't have respect for that. You can take lives, the whole of somebody's lives, and you can pick parts of it and you say, man, I inspire so much. I'm inspired so much and I admire so much that part of it. But to inspire myself on a daily basis, I don't look to him now.
Yeah. What?
You know,
what does a typical day look like? How did you start your day today? You know, we started talking at 9:15 Eastern. Are you 2 hours?
I got
behind?
Up at 4, man. I drink 4. A couple cups of coffee, and yep. I read. I read for a couple hours.
What
I don't
did you
read? No shit. I don't watch no TV crap. I do a movie night once a week with my girls.
Yep.
Which we've been doing for a few years. We make a big deal out of it here at the house. We have the Warrior Family movie night. But I don't watch TV. I don't listen to news. I don't subject myself to any negativity or any of that bullshit that's not going to, has nothing to do with the quality of life I can go ahead to live. And I read good stuff. I read from the great books of the Western world, which is all the classical literature going back. You can do a search on the internet and find out much more about it, but goes back to, you know, the two first stories in a 60-volume set are the Homer's, the Iliad and the Odyssey. But all the classical philosophy and stuff that was written at the time by people who sat down and said, man, what is this thing called life all about, and what am I all about being caught up in it? I mean, you can't read better stuff. I get goosebumps from reading this stuff like I used to get before I ran out to the ring doing Ultimate Warrior. And then otherwise, I read all the old, motivational literature, you know, Earl Nightingale.
I was just going to say that. I am listening to Lead the Field right now. And
Yeah, man.
Yeah,
you know, these guys that are out there today, most of them are the charlatans.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, you know, they just keep regurgitating the same thing over and over and newly revised, you know, new packages and stuff like that. The old stuff is the best stuff.
It is. I love it. It's, I put it on what was interesting is I used to listen to, you know, that kind of stuff or read those books just kind of when I could, like, sit down or if I'm in my car. Now, it's like even when I'm working, I plug my headphones in so I don't hear any other shit. And
yeah.
I'm listening. I'll listen to Lead the Field over and over and over. And I go do my grocery shopping actually at night on the way home from the gym. And I usually get to the grocery store. It's a little bit after 9 at night. And I've been doing it for 2 years, and somebody, one of the guys in there working, he was, like, following me. He's the guy that puts away the shopping carts. And he said to me, I saw him, like, trying to talk to me, and I couldn't understand. So I pulled out my headphone, and he goes, I'm wondering what you're always listening to all these years. I go, it's just, like, this stuff on, like, life. Really
yeah.
Know how to answer people because I know they're going to look at me like, this guy's fucking crazy, walks around here with headphones, doesn't, like, look at anybody. And he's like, I'm kind of interested in life. And I was saying to myself, like, damn. Like, every time I saw him, I said to myself, the fuck, like, you could probably do a whole lot more, my friend, than just collecting these shopping carts. And I said, it's a company called Nightingale, and this is called Lead the Field. And I said, this is something that everybody should listen to. And he said, I think I'm going to listen to that. And I was thinking to myself, I was like, man, everybody should listen to this. And the one thing that resonates
they should have classes on this stuff in schools for kids.
I was just saying, a guy was at my gym yesterday, and just you resonating with, you know, go and fucking do the work. Well, Earl Nightingale was talking about and Lead the Field when he was, like, eating dinner somewhere in, like, Monterey Bay, California, and he sees this young, good-looking couple, and the guy saying, I think we're not going to be able to live here. they're not going to give me a job. And Earl goes, he goes, listen to that. He's like, give me a job. He's like, anything you get is a direct relation to the service you provide to other people. He wanted somebody to give him a job.
Yeah, and look how far that's gone. Look how far we've gone with that idea.
Yeah, with
people that are supposed to be provided with their life.
Yeah, it's amazing. And
kids are growing up with that stuff. They're not being taught anything. I mean, they're taught no American history about what this country is, about the sacrifices. Great. I always say to people, I say, get over yourself. Greater people have done much fucking greater things than you have.
Oh, God.
Than any of us alive today. And they don't teach that stuff. I mean, if they're not taught that stuff, and technology is taking them even further into the fucking hell, the hellacious life that they're going to end up living one day.
I'm not sure where it'll go, but I tell, we train young athletes, and whenever a parent says, I don't think we could afford it anymore, I say, does Johnny have a job? Does he help pay? Does he respect what he has here? Oh, he's not 16, doesn't have his working papers. Fuck that. I've owned two houses in 7 years, and only once have these two kids come to shovel the snow. And even at that, they were twins. So one kid came, it was like 11 or 12 noon, and I was like, dude, I was done at 7 a.m. Then his twin came like 2 hours later, and I said, weren't you just here? He goes, that was my twin brother. I go, why aren't you shoveling him? He said, I woke up late. I was like, I thought to myself, it's fucking 2 o'clock. How the fuck do you guys sleep so late? But nobody is out. If I had a kid that came and knocked on my door and said, I will mow the lawn every 2 weeks, I'll wash your cars every week, and I'll shovel snow when it snows, and I'll be here before. I've never had that happen, but if I was young, I would fucking do it. I did it with my brother. I remember we used to go out 6:30, 7 a.m. when it was a snow day, shoveling. I had two paper routes. I still laugh, and I told this to you. I said, my membership site is $19.95 a month. And those that were in earlier got it at $12.95 a month. And I've had a lot of people like send crazy emails like, cancel me, this is killing me, or I'm cutting back. And I did a video on that, and I said, look, I had it fucking a paper out in third grade, and I made $26 a week. So in third grade, we're talking like I was born in 75. We're talking like 83, 84. And people, almost 30 years later can't handle what I made in a week. They can't handle half of that in a month. And you're right. It's just the people aren't willing to do the work. And Earl Nightingale said, he goes, that's why at the top of the mountain, it's less crowded and the air is better and you can breathe better up there. And he goes, the view is better and it's always better at the top. And I think, or I know that it's easier to get to the top nowadays because so many people aren't just willing to do the work. That's the bottom.
Yeah, I mean, God. But they're, the corporate entities get so much flack because, take a Walmart, for example. Whatever the pros or cons of Walmart or whatever anybody thinks about them, everybody thinks that they're, the big corporate giants are killing the opportunities for everybody else. I say that's bullshit. God, if somebody will just make the effort to surprise other people about the work that they're willing to put forward without having to be told or instructed about it, Jesus, God, man, there's an incredible opportunity out there for people.
It's true.
And I also say to young people, that are of an age to, get out into the real world and start making their way. The only way to do it is to be an entrepreneur.
Yes.
Working for somebody else isn't going to make your life happy.
Unless you are just a conformist. There's a lot of people, though, that just, they like the, they're not like the predator. They don't want to have to hunt for their food. But I like
that. Yeah, that's true.
They do. They really like being comfortable. And I'll tell you, that was a hell of a lot easier, always knowing that.
I don't let those kind of people on my property.
Right. Well, let me ask you this. You had mentioned like you have kind of like a code within your family. So what do you try to teach your kids. They go to school. They're exposed to, you know, normal people, normal thoughts.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, my name, my full legal name is Warrior. It has been for 19 years now. I changed it way back in the early 90s, and largely it had to do then when I took a break from wrestling and I went out to California, and I was I had acquired an agent, a good agent, a guy who handled Jean-Claude Van Damme at the time, and O.J. Simpson before he got in all his trouble and became a real kook. But I had a desire to go out there and, you know, get in action movies. I thought I would be a perfect fit, especially for, like, you know, the, like the Conan movies, because Arnold, when he first did those movies, you know, he signed on, originally the idea was he's going to do three or four. And then he did that, the Conan, and then he did the Terminator. And, you know, as happens with some of those Hollywood people and actors and stuff, they reach a level where they can't go back and do something, you know, anymore, because it might affect their career in a negative way, they think, or agents and stuff are telling them that. And I thought that I would go out there and see if I could pick up where he left off. And so I thought, if I'm going to do it, I was a bachelor at the time, I said, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to use the, put forward the same strategy as I did in my wrestling career. I'm going to absorb myself in it. I'm going to become it. So I changed my name to Warrior, you know, and got the idea of doing so from some of the other identities at the time, iconic personalities that were, you know, called by only the one name. And so I went out there and was out there for about 6 months, and I wasn't going to be able to put up with the phoniness and all the bullshit of it, and came back to Arizona and opened my gym. And when I opened my gym and I was there running it, you know, hands-on, 14, 16 hours a day, my eyes were open to a lot of stuff about the world. Up until that time, I thought everybody, I mean, I went for my chiropractic school. When I was in chiropractic college, basically everybody, it was a chiropractic university. It wasn't a university that had a degree that you could get in chiropractic. It was everybody there was studying to be a doctor of chiropractic. So I was surrounded by other people who had a similar goal. They were doing the same thing as I was. So there was an essence of that at the school, an environment that was all about that. When I was doing my bodybuilding and I was into the gym back at that time, and especially the gyms I went to, everybody had the same mentality, to become the best or the strongest or the biggest that you could. So I was around those kind of people that were striving for a like goal, to be the best at what you did. And when I got into wrestling, I was, you know, on the road 320 days a year with other guys who had the same, were driven by the same desire or goal. Whether or not they had the talent to get to the highest place there, they still thought about it and dreamed about it. So that energy existed in my environment. And I, at that time, up until my early 30s, when I got out and I opened my gym, I thought every human being on the planet had the same drive and desire to be the best they could at whatever they did. And when I opened my gym and I stood at the counter and I operated it, interacted with the people, I used to look behind me when I was engaged in a conversation with a member. I used to turn around and look behind me to see if there was a candid camera, because I couldn't believe what people thought about their lives and about their potential in life, or who they blamed about where they were, what they thought about, you know, even their bosses that they worked for, the people they were married to for years, what they thought about their kids, what they thought about everything. And I was blown away by it. And so I realized through my gym and everything I had done, my philosophy of life was as to act as a warrior, to step up, rise up to the challenge, and be everything that you can be, the best that you can be at what you do. And that's what Warrior represented to me. And I met my wife, and we became very close with one another and decided that we wanted to spend our lives together. And she, like a lot of people like me, had unique, unusual circumstances with her family and stuff, and was really independently minded and was confident about what she could achieve in her life without feeling guilty about it, or, you know, falling prey to the guilt that even the closest people that she knew in her life would try to put on her. And we decided that we were going to raise our kids and in a different way, in a more traditional, old-fashioned way, to make them understand that they have a life for a reason, because it matters, and there's a purpose in it, and you don't neglect that. So she took my name, she took the name Warrior as her surname, and my kids, their name is Warrior. And we have a coat of arms, and we have a mission statement, and they have a creed that they have, a simple thing that they've been taught here in their younger years to understand and always tap into, always, I say, bite down on in your mind when you're faced with something that you need to do that you might find difficult or challenging, bite down on this. And they are taught that they have come here to fulfill a destiny in their life and to stay on track with that. And that we, as their parents, are going to make sure that they do. We're not steering them in any direction about what they end up doing in their life to provide for themselves, but every little kid will reveal that if you just pay attention. And as my daughters already have. And we are not created the way we are, as unique as we are. I mean, your fingerprint makes you different than the other 6 billion people on the fucking planet, man. That means something. That matters for something. It's all of what we have about our lives and what we are in our humanness is not, it's not for nothing. We aren't created the way we are to come here and fucking squander it. And my kids are taught that. They're taught that. They are taught that, and they have been, I've had it taught to them from the time they were old enough to look into my eyes and understand it, and they will hear my voice even when I'm not here anymore, that it's a responsibility they have, and it came with life. And, you know, that's, I wish that I had somebody to do that to me when I was young. Otherwise, you go through life just suffering and being miserable. And that sucks. People should compare how much their life sucks to how much it really doesn't suck to step up and do the hard things in life to make your life work.
What's like a typical day that looks so, wake up very early?
Yeah, I do that, and I do my art all day. I do my art. I do my reading in the morning. I do my breakfast with my girls and stuff.
What's the breakfast look like for you guys? Is there a typical breakfast? Or?
Yeah, I mean, they eat a good, healthy breakfast, you know, the eggs and some bacon or turkey sausage or something, whatever they want to have, or some good quality cereals, you know, that you can get, the better stuff, the organic stuff. We, you know, that's one thing that we started paying attention to. I especially, in the last few years, in 2008, I went back for a wrestling gig in Spain, which was, you know, hindsight being 2020, I probably shouldn't have done it, but I got on it. You know, I eat to live, and I always have. That's another thing that really pisses me off about all the nutritional theories that are out there, the different ones, especially the one about having to eat every 2 or 3 hours. It's absolute fucking nonsense. You don't need all the supplements. Eat when you're hungry. You know, going without food once in a while is okay. And all these young guys are all cut up in. I told you that, you know, I get people, young guys writing and asking me, what is more important, to buy the, you know, the supplements that are out there or go to the gym? You know, I mean, not and or, just or. And you don't need to do that to build your body, to put on muscle weight or anything like that. And so I also, when I went in, back in 2008, I went on a really low fat diet with really high carbs every 3 or 4 days, with carb loading, really high protein too. And my body reacted in a way, it just became inflamed on the inside.
Mm.
And I didn't know what was going on at the time until I started looking around, as every human being can. You can learn anything for yourself if you just take the time to find the knowledge. Started looking around and came across some of these different ideas that are out there that fit in with the way that I built my body, put on size, and got stronger back when I was younger. You know, we didn't run around worrying about whether we needed to get home to make sure we got a whey protein shake in our body within 30 minutes of finishing our damn workout.
What did you guys, back in the day when you would eat, what you, how did you
just eat good food? You know, your instincts told you that, you know, eat a lot of meat. Get some meat, you know, chicken, poultry, fish, steak, good quality meat. Get good quality meat in you and eat stuff that you buy on the edges of a grocery store. Not, you know, no cardboard carbohydrates, none of the processed stuff. And eat that kind of stuff. And, you know, it's okay to drink some milk, and it's okay to, you know, stay away from the sugar and stuff like that.
Hmm.
Occasionally get, you know, have some of that and don't feel guilty about it at all. But you know, you eat that kind of stuff, it's going to have an effect on you. And, I mean, back then, hell, the guys that I look to as the greatest bodybuilders of all time, and I'm not trying to take anything away from the bodybuilders today, but when I look at a physique and I go, wow, man, the things that I look up to or would aspire to be or did when I was a young kid, they didn't have all the stuff they got out there today.
Very confusing. I feel
it is.
I feel bad for the kids of today, or just, you know, the people in general. Like you said, just the, if all somebody was stuck with was a barbell, I mean, I could make somebody pretty damn nasty using just a barbell. No rack.
Yeah, hell yeah. But the thing is, putting it on your back and squatting down with just a bar on your back, I mean, people don't want to do that.
Yep.
It's not comfortable. Doing deadlifts isn't comfortable. Doing bent over rows sucks to people.
I love that
stuff. You know, I mean, but those are the things that work.
Yeah, you have to fall in love with that style of training. So I guess it's just like what you are exposed, what people are exposed to. And I don't know.
Don't go to Planet Fitness.
Oh, God.
Don't set off the alarm.
The alarm. What do you ever train at a commercial gym now, or only in?
Yeah, I mean, I did. There's a place in Health Club, a health spa in Santa Fe.
Yeah.
And it's a big place, so that's a good thing about it, because even if you can get off to yourself in the corner, but there, of course, there's never anybody at the squat rack.
Sure.
You know, they've got it loaded out with elliptical machines and stuff. I mean, if I had a gym today, I told my wife, Dana, I said, you know, what I would do is like a bowling alley. I'd have shoes behind the counter. What size do you wear? Put them on. Okay, there's the door. Go outside and run. All this cardio shit.
Yeah.
What a joke. I see these freaks, you know, these freaks on these elliptical machines going crazy, you know.
Yeah.
And they're all caught up in, like, they're really doing something for themselves.
it's a fucking shame.
But when I first started going up there, man, everybody, there's a lot of old people up there, and they all went and complained that I was, you know, I was
loud,
grunting too much, you know.
Holy crap! So, what do you have inside your barn gym? What equipment is in there?
Power rack, about 1,500 pounds of free weights, and bunch of bars and dumbbells up to 140. I've got a chin dip assist machine and a leg curl. I've got a leg curl machine, but I still get just as much out of, like, stiff leg deadlifts and stuff. I've got a reverse hyper machine.
I've got a
leg press, huh?
Who turned you on to the reverse hyper?
I found through Louis Simmons.
Yeah,
you know, by following his stuff. I had back surgery a couple years ago. I never told anybody about it because I really, you know, I'm just I. people don't want to hear your shit. I don't care. You know, I just wasn't mine to make a big deal out of, like, having back surgery like Hogan did, where he's fucking videoing, you know, on his iPhone and stuff and putting stuff up. You know, wanted to rehab it and do the best I could. I was doing a lot of good mornings and stuff like that, and I came across the reverse hyper machine. And I've got that's all I got. I mean, that's what I do. That's the stuff I use to make it happen for me.
The basics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got the leg extension.
Right. And did you pick up new equipment, or did you go, like, try to find old stuff?
I took stuff from when I had a gym.
In Arizona. What was the
name
of that gym?
Yeah, when I sold the stuff, the majority of it, to the one kid, I went and got a truckload of it, and I told my wife, I said, I can't take it anymore up at the gym. And the people who owned the gym that I went to, the commercial gym, they were good people. They always supported me. They loved me.
Right.
They told the members, just leave him alone. And that was cool. But still, even that, I mean, I noticed that... And this will happen to no matter how strong of a mind a weightlifter, powerlifter has. You can start going to a commercial gym where the atmosphere isn't intense. It's going to start having an effect on your workouts.
Yep, that's why I stopped.
It takes a lot. It takes a lot to fucking tone it all out all the time. It really does.
It sucks.
But largely because you can't go up and just piss slap people.
you get
a sense that they're looking at you and they're not approving of how you're training and how intense you're training. You want to just go up and put them in their place. What bothers you the most, you can overcome, you can push them out of your mind, but you get angry on the inside, like you want to go up and somehow convince them that their way of doing things is wrong.
I remember that was my biggest frustration, was trying to find a gym that just had loud, cranking music, and that was important to me. And I'll never forget the hardcore gym that was in my town that, when the owner sold his gym down by the beach and came back up, removed the tape deck, and week by week, day by day, don't drop the weights, no chalk allowed beyond this point, don't wear work boots. Like, they pulled the artistic nature out of all of us, and I always wonder, like, that place used to be so packed. I remember bodybuilding being a very hardcore thing. Everybody trained hard and heavy, and then that gym, I remember, went into like a ghost town, and I can't only imagine that these guys just stopped lifting, or I don't know what the fuck happened to them. But
well, like you told me about the Planet Fitness guy, you know, he's a smart guy. He did a study. People are The thing that bothered people about going to gyms was that they were intimidated, so they put an end to that. But you got to ask yourself, I asked myself, okay, the guy came up with the idea of how to get people in there and pay money to get to the gym, but, I mean, he's fucking killing them otherwise. I don't, you know, there's an ethical part involved in the things that you do. And, you know, it's not always just only about money, although most people, that's all they think about. I wouldn't be comfortable in that. I mean, what are those people getting out of there? They go there for years, and they go to a gym with the environment that doesn't intimidate them, but they don't do anything for themselves. They don't get them. It's not good to lie to people and keep from them what you actually have to do to make your life work. That doesn't help them.
I wonder if a hardcore gym could exist. And, I mean, I've heard of, you know, people saying this gym is hardcore, that gym is hardcore. But, I mean, I'm talking a place where it's just free weights, some hammer strength, some loud fucking music, and that's it. Like, I wonder if it could help, like, actually allow somebody to make a living from.
I do. I think fitness and exercise has been around long enough that there's a market for it. And I have an idea, but I'm not going to say it. But it's an idea that, I think the time is right. I think the time is right, man. Everything goes in cycles anyway, and with the culture that we have today where everybody thinks they're entitled to everything, nobody does want to work. I think there are people out there like me and you. Look, people like me and you are making our lives work. We're not caught up in all the drama everybody else is. There's a huge audience of people like us out there. You know, we're not concerned with first spending our time having our voice heard. We're spending our effort making our lives work.
True.
And when a product or a service comes up like that and somebody puts it out there, you have to beat people back.
Hmm.
Especially up in your neck of the woods.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Yeah. I would...
They're not,
you know,
to,
yeah.
They're not used to manual labor, but it's, you know, I question it because I see, like, when we have, like, our athletes training at our gym, and it's like one kid out of an entire football team. Football team could have 60, 80, 100 kids. And he's like, man, none of my teammates would do this. It's too hard for them. And I say, holy shit, like, that is fucking insane, man. That is insane.
John, I mean, that's not the way I was raised. I had a stepdad, and he was always doing something. We lived out in the country, and he was always fiddling around, tinkering with something, building something, hauling something, lifting something, all the time, man. And he looked great, and he lived a great life, and he was healthy the whole time. And in the summertime, he'd run around with his shirt off and just... He had a natural healthiness to him, his muscles and everything, just from doing manual labor. I mean, yeah it's different times.
If I opened one of these places, I said to myself, I was like, yeah, I would just fucking make it like a manual labor place. I'd have a bunch of power racks, barbells, dumbbells, kettlebells, and then I'd have like a back area with just fucking stones and tires, and the music would be loud, and you'd be there to fucking sweat. And I always say to myself, I'm like, man, would that place just run itself to the ground? Like, who the fuck would show up? But I have to believe, like, I see, you know, I feel like this is why people have built their garage gyms, because they've got nowhere else to go.
Yeah.
So they just said, fuck it.
What about the other guys you are running with that are doing a similar thing to you? What do they think about it?
I don't know. You know, I think I'm not really sure. You know, everybody's kind of gone the route of doing, like, coaching type, you know. I kind of like the idea of just a place that's open for people to just be able to come in and just fucking, you know, go and a place where they could escape. Because I know that sometimes you wake up at 2, 3 in the morning and you got that feeling, or you're having like a fucking rough day, and if there's one place that helps you like fix it, it's just you know, grabbing hold of some cold iron. But and I see some, like, there's a quote-unquote hardcore gyms, but I went to one early in the morning one Sunday in my area, and I was like, I'm going to just fucking go there and be motivated and lift, you know, heavy in front of these people. And the music's not loud, and while you're benching, the guy is vacuuming under you, and it's like, dude, do I fucking have to actually tell you that this is not the right thing to do? That when somebody's training, you don't vacuum under them, or you shouldn't even be vacuuming while people are here. It just fucking distracting. So, or if the music's loud enough, I wouldn't have heard the vacuum. But it just
one way to do it would be to just expand. You know, expand your business, and so that you just didn't give in to this idea you have all the way, and experiment with it. You know,
sure.
And see.
Yeah, experiment.
And then
that's
from that point, fucking go all out.
Yeah.
You know, and that would be the best way anyway, from a business perspective, to do it. Just move to get to a location where you have the extra space to be able to experiment with it. While you can still do the thing that you got going on with your teams, and that, I mean, because that's a good thing, man, and that you get jacked on that anyway.
Yeah, I'm a big believer when it comes to business stuff to start small and to test. To test and not go in and blow all kinds of money, and also not a believer in people ask me this, and I mean, you've been in business for yourself, and I'm sure people want to like do investing and things like you. And I've actually had investors say, hey, let's franchise the Underground. And I never wanted to invest or have investors in things like that. What, you know, did, how, you seem like you're more of like a lone kind of guy also.
Yeah, well, you give something up, you know, you, even if somebody, you get more money, you know, the finances you have to operate are greater. You give something up. It's not for free.
Right.
And I like being in control of my, I like owning my life. You know, that was one thing when I was traveling up and down the road at the peak of my career, sitting up in first class and stuff, there'd be guys 60, 70, 50 years old, and you're on a 4 or 5 hour flight, you strike up a conversation, you find out what they do, and, you know, if it's a good conversation, inevitably they start talking about that they're always traveling, they're always on the hunt, they're always out there trying to make business happen, and they have a lot of regret that they haven't seen their kids grow up and stuff like that.
Right.
And, you know, I would sit there and say to myself, being new to, you know, success at that level, I'd say, well, when is enough enough? You know, what's really important? Look, the goal in life is to be happy, not in a hedonistic way, but in a way where you have a peace of mind and you're doing something that brings joy to you while you're doing it. Everybody has that chance and that opportunity. But, if, you know, if... I mean, when you open the doors for other people to come in and you grow a business, then you those personalities that come in and are a part of that affect, make the energy, your original energy of what you wanted to do, they make it different.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I told you the story of when I owned my gym. I had... you know, staff and kids working for me and stuff. And if a college kid came in, I thought, hell, he's going to college. He wants to do the best he can. I mean, I can't remember. I can picture right now and I start laughing. And my wife would be laughing too. I used to call them on their days off and tell them to come to the gym. And I'd walk around the gym cussing them out for stuff. I mean, you could have eaten off the floor in my gym. And, you know, it just, I went through 5 different managers.
What was the name of your gym? Did you call it
Warriors Gym? It was all built around, you know, basically the same intense signature trademark of the Ultimate Warrior character. You know, everything was lively. I remember I went to all the different exercise companies. I said, I want all my stuff powder coated in blood red.
Wow.
And they all said, that's stupid. You know, you need to get like a khaki color or that pukey green color or white, you know, you need to be subtle about things. And I said, no fucking way, man. I turned it into like an industrial. Everything was metal and had a big pro shop like the Mad Max Thunderdome and big steel food bar made out of all kinds of metal work and stuff like that. And, the energy in there was incredible. Man, that music was loud, too.
Yeah, but what were you playing? What did you do, put CDs in?
I don't even know. No, at the time they had the, and I remember being pissed off about it, the radio stuff you could tap into, and then you had the BMI charges or something it's called.
I don't know.
You know, the royalty charges, they started that where, you know, gyms and businesses that play music, you got to pay a fee
for
royalties.
Right.
That kind of stuff, but the members we had, man, they loved it. And I had these big chalkboards I'd write on every day.
Really?
In the same way like Ultimate Warrior would cut a promo. But the people who loved it, they loved it. And that's the people I want to be around. Well, I told you the story, you know. I owned it for about 18 months.
Yeah.
And was there every day, every single day, 7 days a week, 16 hours a day. And would do all my working out after midnight after it closed.
Wow.
And that's when I first met my wife. My girlfriend became my wife later. And she, you know, she's one of those people that needs like 8 hours sleep a day. But she enjoyed being with me, so she was hanging with me. I mean, I was sleeping like 2 or 3 hours a day.
Yeah, it's nuts. And how many hours a day do you sleep now?
I loved it, though. She was hanging with me.
Yeah.
And so we, you know, the gym would close down. She'd be there all day with me. I'd say, let's work out. Let's do this.
Yeah.
So we'd work out till like 3 in the morning, you know, and then we'd go and we'd crash for a while, and then I'd be back up there at 6 o'clock. And, but we took a 3-day weekend. After about 18 months, I finally found a guy I could trust long enough to get out of there for 3 days. And actually, we came over to where we live now, the area. And on the way back on Sunday, we're at the airport, and I told her, I said, when we get back, I'm closing the gym.
What'd she say to you?
And she just looked at me, and I said, I'm putting a letter on the desk. I'm giving everybody their money back. I'm cutting off all the auto debits. I said, I can't take it anymore. It's just... it's not the work, it's the attitude.
Yeah.
I'm sick of people thinking that somebody else can make their lives work for them. And I just couldn't take it. I mean, people would come in, you know, and if the toilet paper needed to be replaced, that ruined, that was, you know, that was a reason to say their whole workout was ruined.
Holy shit.
It was pretty neat. But the people that were my we had almost 2,000 members.
That's fucking packed.
Yeah, man. I mean, I had a good loyal, and everybody respected my decision. It was incredible that nobody got mad about it. Everybody respected it.
Yeah.
Some of the big bodybuilders, you know, famous bodybuilders, I won't mention any names, they used to come in there, and they'd walk right past the counter like they, you know, they were entitled.
Right.
And I'd get a buzz back in my office, you know, from the front desk girl or something like
right.
that. And I'm talking about some, you know, if I say their names, people know.
Right.
I'd go right out on the gym floor, man, in front of everybody. And I'd kick the motherfucker out.
Yeah, what did you say? What would you say?
I said, what, do I owe you something? Because, you know, when I was on the road and I was traveling on the road, every
yeah.
time I walked into a gym wherever I was, I had a $20 bill in my hand.
Yep, to pay.
And I paid. And when they said, you don't have to pay... I said, I'm paying. You're running a business. Run your business.
Yeah, I get pretty fired up with that shit, too, that the best way I feel to run the gym is to auto-debit that shit, and we actually
yeah.
had...
I didn't think that in the beginning.
Yeah.
And I learned.
You got to get rid of...
Yeah.
You're a bill collector. But we had a kid that trained here, and they had paid for... 2 months instead of 3 months, which we normally don't do, and for some reason I missed it, and then I realized the kid trained for like 5 weeks for free. So I emailed the dad, and I sent him a payment link, and the kid was supposed to keep training, had a nutrition program to follow, and the dad said, I'll send in a check with his buddy that normally comes on Thursday. Kid came, his friend came in, boom, that never happened, so I sent a follow-up, and he said, I'll take care of this next Thursday, and that was like the Thursday after Christmas. That didn't happen, and then I sent him an email, and I said, so much for honesty and integrity in men. And
yeah.
So we were now like 7 weeks behind, and he emailed me back after paying the link. He said, you know, I almost didn't pay this. And I'm not going to mention the kid's name, but he said, if, you know, John Smith, which is his son, you know, knew about this, this malicious attack, he would want nothing to do with you. So I emailed him back, and I said, first of all, let's break this down. Your son trained here for 5 weeks for free. When I mentioned that was my mistake, I sent you a credit card payment link. You told me you'd send it in with the other John Smith. I said, there goes your honesty. I go, that didn't happen. I emailed you again and asked you to take care of it. You didn't say, sorry, I'm in a bind. This is a tough time. You said nothing. You said, I'll take care of it next Thursday. I said, Thursday came. You did not follow through. I go, there goes your integrity. I go, I put food on the table for my family by running this business. I go, you showed a lack of respect for what we do. You did not tell the truth. I said, if you told me that this is, you know, a financial, squeeze for you, I would have taken care of you. So I said, you should tell your son about this and you should show him this email exchange so he understands what kind of person you are and how you're blaming me when you need to take responsibility for the fact that you did not tell me the truth and you disrespected your own word. And he never replied, but it was just funny how somebody, you know, like you're saying, this is that's the kind of guy that would say, we can't live here anymore, they won't give me a job. Like, this fucking give me shit is out of control, and that's why, you know, I'm really tightening up reins. And if I do run a gym, like what we're talking about, for anybody to train in, boom, EFT, that's fucking it, you know?
Yeah. Well, look, what you just went through is, that's a powerful thing to know. You know, I had to learn it for myself, too. I never had a dad or a mentor. I talk a lot about mentoring and how important it is to me, like the show that I'm doing, and that I'm at a place in my life where I want to inspire and influence in a positive way young kids who are just getting their start. I'm not in competition with anybody anymore, and I think it's unfortunate that young people growing up today don't have somebody to look to get some wise advice and some sound judgment. And, you know, to know that those kind of things and be able to stand up and mentally defend yourself and your position, there's nothing more powerful than that. You know, I've probably been mocked and ridiculed about that more than anything else, that I'm not a dumb fucking jelly-minded, you know, former professional wrestler. And have gone on and made my life work in other ways that are even more powerful than, you know, being that ultimate warrior presence that went to the ring and muscled his way through sports entertainment. I'm surprised about how people are. I get that all the time. I mean, I get people all the time that lie. This is like a whole other discussion, but I mean, they lie.
Sure.
And it's like, what's the big deal that I lie? It's a big deal to your life, man.
Yes, it is.
It's a big deal to your life. I tell my kids all the time. I said, there's nothing more important than telling the truth. Nothing. Nothing. I can work with you, man, if you tell me. I can work with you if you tell me about what you did that was wrong and a mistake. But I cannot tolerate, I will not tolerate a lie.
Yeah.
I mean, it just... And you, we live in a culture where it gets turned back on you, like you're the fucking hard ass. You're the heartless one.
Yep.
God, that kind of stuff really matters to me. So you're way ahead of the game.
Yeah.
Because in business, you're going to get that from a lot of people, and they're going to be the ones to roll their eyes that, why are you becoming so stiff about this? That, you know, what I said isn't really actually what happened, or it's, you know, not the real story. That really bothers me. That's another reason to, you know, own your life.
Sure.
Other, you know, and not make compromise on that.
Yeah, I love it. What was I going to ask you? Because I don't want to keep you any longer.
Yeah, well, we'll get off this time, but I'll be happy to do whatever you want. Probably some of the stuff that we talked about, you know, you're going to have to edit down.
Yeah, well, I'll keep it as is, because I think this is important to kind of, you know, you and I spoke about a business guy that we know, and I remember that businessman mentioned in one of his audio CDs that he was talking about a real successful businessman, and that guy owned like a little shack somewhere on like a lake, and he said that in there he had a little radio with a cassette player and some soft drinks, and he said the most important and most powerful part of his day was the 1 hour he escaped and went to his little shack and listened to, you know, empowering mind stuff. So I think that, you know, somebody listening to this, you know, put it on your iPod or whatever, or just lock yourself in and really take action with this. But before we close out, we're just... You know, I'm looking at your artwork. It's just amazing. And I'm a big believer in exactly what you talk about, just listening to the right things, surrounding yourself. Like my office wall, you know, has a lot of things that inspire me and kind of keep me on track. So, you know, what kind of people are reaching out to you to get the personalized, like, artwork done? Or do they say, Warrior, you know, create something for me. This is what.
Well, what I did was, there's a story behind it, and it's at my blog. You know,
yeah.
When I was, I had a, back in, after I went to WWF for the last time in 96, I was there for 4 or 5 months. The crap hit the fan again, between me and Vince, and that led to a 5-year litigation. And during that time, and actually, in December of 95, I got contacted by Vince to go back. He wanted me to come back under the usual terms. I said no. Linda, his wife, who eventually came on as CEO, called me at the beginning of 96 and asked me if I'd be interested in coming back. And I said, yeah, I'm under a specific set of terms. So because of her, I ended up going back. But at the end of 95, when Vince came back to me, I'd already shut down my gym to the public, and I had I was retrofitting it to become a training facility for guys that wanted to be pro wrestlers.
Right.
It was one of the first of its going to be one of the first of its kind. Up until that time, there were former professional wrestlers who, out of their garage or out of their backyard, they would train other guys to be wrestlers, and most of them were real assholes. And they would just take the money and they wouldn't deliver on what they said they could do. Not that they could make a guy's career work, but they wouldn't even deliver on teaching him the basics, you know, how to get started. They'd just take the money and rip them off. And so when I was in Scottsdale, and because it's a vacation area and a lot of tourism and stuff, I'd get a lot of former professional athletes who, you know, because of an injury or something like that, they couldn't continue in their professional careers. And they were big fans of Ultimate Warrior, so they, when they came to town, they'd come there, they'd work out, get in conversations with them, and they, you know, big, huge guys, you know, just big guys, you know, just tall and thick and big-boned and stuff like that, like, you know, some of the athletes that you cross paths with it. You know, they're not even really into working out very much, but they're just big and huge, natural.
Yep.
And they would come in and get in a conversation, and they would talk about, yeah, you know, I'd still like to do something athletic, you know, and I've thought about, you know, daydreamed or whatever about getting into professional wrestling. And so, you know, I kept hearing that from a lot of people. So eventually, when I got tired of how de-energizing owning the gym to the public was, I decided I was going to retrofit it and open up into a training camp. The whole gym, I put a big ring in there and everything, and I started advertising through the wrestling magazines for that, and the response was huge. I got like 1,000 responses from it for a couple different ideas. One of them was a one-day thing called Get a Taste of It, meaning that they got to come and have a seminar with me. I would answer any question they had about professional wrestling, which up until that time hadn't really been done. I mean, I'd let them in the back door, but, you know, backstage. And then there would be a training session that would go on. And they'd get to get into the ring, and they'd get to do some things and stuff like that. Well, when I finally agreed to go back to wrestling in 96, right there at the beginning, Linda and them got behind the idea because they saw the potential for, geez, we can pull right out of this thing. We can pull talent right out of it. So we were negotiating to do it together. And then when I went back to work 4 or 5 months later, things fell apart. And the lawsuit started, and I, at the time, I was naive about, you know, lawsuits. I'd never even had a lawyer to do, you know, like a parking ticket or a traffic violation or anything, and any kind of beef for nothing. And so I got a lawyer, and the whole thing just, you know, got set afire in the litigation and the bills and the retainers and everything else, and I didn't have the experience as an entrepreneur to understand that what I needed to do was focus on still developing this wrestling school thing, which was Warrior University. That's what the name of it was going to be. And also fight Vince on the side. And so what I decided was I'm going to take everything out. I'm going to regroup. I'm going to concentrate on this lawsuit because they were making some claims that, you know, I didn't own the intellectual property Ultimate Warrior. And that was the most important thing to me. And so for the next 5 years, bringing this thing full circle now to my artwork, I wanted to stay busy. I wanted to stay creative. I wanted to stay inspired. I didn't want to just sit there in my own pile of shit. And So I was always into art. I had art in my house, some nice art. And one day I had a great pencil drawing of a Native American, of a guy, a famous artist out there. I took it off my wall, and I sat there all day, and I tried to replicate it. And I did well enough, and I have the picture of what I actually did up at my website as part of the story about how I came to be involved in art or have my art career. And from that, I went to the art store, and I just started out with the ABC books on how to do things. And one thing led to the next, and I eventually started working with oil paints in a fine art way and using a knife, and I started creating these portraits that are just absolutely unreal. And to inspire myself every day in my work, what I started doing was because I love to read, and I start my day with reading, and I'm a big fan of historical figures and people who have lived in the past, I started doing these 6x9 watercolor and ink things. I'd do a portrait of a figure or a person, or I'd do like an abstract thing using my logo, which is, you know, a signature mark, a brand for me that everybody knows. And then I would complement that image on that 6x9 piece of watercolor paper. I'd complement it with a quote, either one that I would come up with or one that I was associated with the portrait that I drew and painted. And I had a stack of them. I still do. I mean, I've got about 400 in a stack, but I had about 500 of them in a stack. It's a daily exercise that I did every single day, 7 days a week for years. And I had an art friend come over about a year ago, and he saw them, and he said, "What are these?" And I said, "Well, they're just, I call them my weapons of warrior wisdom." And it just came out, and he said, "Well, what are you doing with them?" And I said, "Well, I'm not really doing anything, and I just use them to inspire myself." And he said, "Well, you should think about selling them because they're awesome." And so I put a couple online and put them up for a bid, and people bought them, and eventually it just turned into a big, huge business where people write me and they want me to do custom ones. And of somebody that they admire or some quote that they, you know, inspires them that they have on their desk written on a piece of paper or whatever. And it's turned into a big, huge thing. And at the same time, I have my big oil painting thing going. Most of it is commission work. And it's simply from just staying focused on it and sticking with it and being persistent. And it's turned into something. I mean, we got sidetracked so many different times, but you asked me, what do I do during the day?
Yeah.
That's what I do. I work on that. I do my stuff in the morning, and for the rest of the day, I do my work. You know, you're a creative guy. That comes through your website. I can see that, man. I mean, you spend a lot of time, alone time, doing the creative part of your business. And it amazes me when people, they think that what you achieve with your blog and your website and stuff just sort of somehow falls out of thin air, like it doesn't take work. People will write me all the time, like they say, "What do you do with all your free time?" You know? I say, "Well, look, for me to have this stuff to sell and to produce this stuff that people commission for me, I got to do it. You know, you got to engage the work." And what I have found, and what most people don't realize, because they get caught up in thinking that they always got to be engaged in activity and interaction with other people, is that the best way to make a way for yourself in life is to do something where you have solitude.
True.
And a lot of solitude. But people are so fearful of it. And the technology today and the easy, quick access of all that is not allowing people to grasp that. And my best days are when I just sit in silence and I do my art. I won't even listen to music. I just sit and think and enjoy my own thoughts, enjoy my own company. It's a powerful thing, man, and it's something that great people from the past used to do a lot of. You know, like, I'm a big fan of American history. I did this Ultimate Warrior character that's a hero, you know, to young kids. And when you're doing that and you're in an arena and you're meeting a Make-A-Wish kid or you're meeting some fans and I got my gear on and I got my face painted and you look in that kid's face, man, they believe it. They're there. So if somebody had asked me during my career if I could point to anybody that was a hero to me, I would not have been able to point to anybody. And when I got out of the business and I started reading, the great books led me into American history. And when I read American history, the founding people of the country became my heroes. And all the eloquence, all the beauty, all the rationality, all the reason that came out of the founding of this country is in large part due to these people spent a lot of time in solitude thinking about things, thinking things through. And, I mean, some of them even talk about in the correspondence that they exchanged back then about taking long walks about 10 miles a day. And it's important that you do that. It's important to get off, like you say, to the little shack with your, you know, your soft drinks or whatever.
And just escape. Yeah, you get caught up. You just can't think. You can't move forward. And you look back at 1 year to the next and you say, shit, I'm in the same place and doing the same thing. So this was an amazing conversation, and I'm just
it was man, and I appreciate awesome. The opportunity, and I'm going to look forward to, you know, paying attention, keep paying attention to what you're doing, man, and also get some get from you some of the wisdom that you have about what you're doing over there.
Yeah, I love, you know, like I said, I love to share whatever, and anytime you want to chat, you've got my number, and I'm gonna definitely get some artwork from you and get it up here in my office, and you know, I'm like you too. I really want to teach my kids a different way than whatever you know, I guess the normal way, and I just think I find inspiration in a good amount of things, not a whole lot of things, but I'm excited, and I'll connect with you further on that with the artwork. But this was awesome, man, and I'll send
it was.
You...
And about your kids, man, yeah. Look, there's nothing more important for a man,
yeah,
and than being able to instill a philosophy of life in your children, because guys like us that are older, of course, I'm much older than you, you look at the world at large and you think about, where's this all going to end up? These things that we are paying attention to, and we don't see any, you know, positive outcome coming out of them. But if you teach your kids the right ideas, the real ideas, they'll be prepared for anything, man. And that's more important than getting a degree or a plaque on the wall to go out and collect a paycheck. And that's a good thing to do. But I enjoyed it too, man, so I'll let you go with that.
That was awesome, Warrior. Just tell everybody once again, where would you like them to just go find more info? You want the which website?
Yeah, Warrior. They can go to Warrior University. Go there. I've got, you know, for years my web presence operated off the domain ultimatewarrior.com.
Right.
There's a link there to get to Warrior University, so ultimatewarrior.com. In fact, ultimatewarrior.com is the domain that I'm going to use to work with Deb.
Awesome.
And get that thing up and running with the blog and start doing some of this stuff that you're doing.
It's amazing. I think that many people need to see and hear a whole lot more of this, so I'm psyched.
Yeah, and they can always reach me. My email address is MR for Mr.
Yep.
Mr. Warrior at ultimatewarrior.com. MRWarrior at ultimatewarrior.com.
Cool.
And get all my emails.
Yep, and check, you know, at Warrior University, you got the Facebook, the Twitter links, YouTube is
amazing. Well, I'm really in love with all that stuff.
The YouTube, I think, is amazing. Real impressed with, you know, that's just you speaking your mind. But we'll definitely leave it at that. And for all those listening, I want to hear comments about this and what you got out of this interview and this conversation. And this was awesome, Warrior. So I'll talk to you soon, my brother. I'll shoot you an email to follow up.
Okay, later, Zach.
Right,
have a great day, man.
Take care.
Bye-bye.